It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Hedrick Smith is the Pulitzer Prize-winning former reporter with the New York Times, Emmy Award-winning reporter-producer for PBS's Frontline, and he's the author of highly acclaimed books, including The Russians. On a recent visit to Pittsburgh, he spoke with 90.5 WESA reporter Kevin Gavin about his latest book, Who Stole the American Dream?
Hedrick Smith, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Great to be here. Love Pittsburgh.
So, has the dream indeed been stolen? Has it changed, evolved?
Well, you know, I started out to write a book called The Dream at Risk because back in 2009, it was obvious that things were at risk. We had losing 600,000 jobs a month, thousands of people were being tossed out of their homes. Wall Street had collapsed. The economy is heading into a nosedive. People were talking about the Great Recession. What I was interested in was not just the immediate news, because I'd been making documentaries for PBS the previous several years, Is Walmart Good for America, The Wall Street Fix, Tax Me If You Can You Afford to Retire? I'd been into a lot of these economic issues, and I knew that problems had been building for quite a while. How long, I wasn't sure, and that's what I got into. So I had a lot of questions. I didn't have a lot of answers, but the more I dug into it, the more I became convinced that the dream was stolen. It didn't just drift away. And by the dream, I mean the kind of middle-class standard of living that people had gotten used to in the 1950s, the 1960s, the 1970s, where particularly in an area like this, the steel mills were operating, had good, steady jobs. The steel workers were negotiating rising pay. They had health care benefits. They had retirement pension plans from the steel companies. And this was going on all over America. This was not just the Monongahela Valley. This was all over the place, auto industry, rubber industry, and so forth. That was the kind of time when people could count on steady jobs with some ups and downs with business cycles, and they could figure their kids could do better than they would do, and they could afford their own homes, and they had some kind of economic security. Now we have this economic insecurity. We not only have unemployment, but even people who are employed are nervous about losing their jobs. Jobs are being offshored. It doesn't matter where you are. People think of it as a problem for assembly line workers, but people who work for IBM have watched their jobs disappear, and Microsoft. IBM now has more employees in India than it does in the United States. So knowledge economy jobs in the back offices of banks are going overseas. Boeing engineers are seeing the design jobs that they're working on the new Boeing airliners. They're going to Japan and China. So everybody is vulnerable. That's a huge change. So in that sense, yes, the dream has gone, and it's been taken by powerful people, powerful forces in our society.
Let's start by making the case for why a strong middle class is important. And you start off your book with a strong argument from a well-known person, Aristotle, and his thoughts on the middle class.
Aristotle says the best society is society where the middle has more power and more prosperity, essentially, than either the aristocracy or the people who are poor. But economists will tell you today that the best way for America to grow is for America to have a strong middle class. When you have high inequalities of income, as we have in America today, that slows growth. That's destructive to growth. And there are all kinds of studies that show that. People have gone back and looked at periods in American history, and then the International Monetary Fund has actually gone and looked at different societies and discovered that even in other cultures, the same thing is true. High inequality of income, slow growth. More wealth, more shared prosperity with the middle class, what the economists call the great convergence, a convergence of salaries at the top, the middle, the bottom, closer together, better for growth.
You mentioned earlier that you started looking at the idea for a book, I believe you said in 2009, about the dream, about the middle class. So now, 2013, assess the middle class, maybe even from four short years ago.
Well, it's unbelievable. In the last 4 years, since the bottom of the recession, there was a report in the New York Times just literally 10 days ago, corporate profits have risen 20.1% per year on average for 4 years in a row. And the average middle-class household income in America has risen 1.4%. So you've got this tremendous growth in corporate profits. You have Wall Street literally celebrating every day, breaking a record. Stocks are way up, and we have 22 million people looking for full-time jobs. 14 million are looking for any work, and 8 million more are in part-time jobs than they want and need full-time jobs. That's not an economy that's succeeding. That's an economy that is failing in the most fundamental sense to provide a decent living standard for the great bulk of its people. So it's still going on today. And what's interesting and sad is that if you go back over the last 30 years, that has been the pattern. What's interesting is if you look at what happened after World War II, from 1945 to 1975, roughly 30 years, the productivity of the American workforce, which after all is the driver of a growing economy and a better standard of living, almost doubled. It grew 97%. And the income of the average household grew 95%. 97% growth in productivity, 95% growth in middle-class income, practically dollar for dollar. In the last 30 years, since 1975, productivity has gone up 80% and the average family income has gone up 10%. And the only reason the average family income has gone up 10% is you got more women working more hours. Because if you take the average male and his pay and benefits in 2011 were identical, adjusted for inflation, to 1978. So at the middle, three decades of going nowhere.
Let's take a look at a couple of points, key factors in those last 30 to 40 years that you talk a lot about in your book, Who Stole the American Dream? And one was, I guess, a lot of people don't know about, and you tell us about it. Lewis Powell. Now, we know that name, but it was as an attorney prior to his nomination for the Supreme Court. He sort of sounded the rally call for business to take over politically.
Unbelievable. Now, we have to remember, go back a little bit. The middle class was doing well, partly because business leaders actually believed at that time in stakeholder capitalism, paying people well, taking care of all the people who had a stake in the corporation, but also because the middle class had power. There was a consumer movement that was pushing business to make products more honest, to label them better, to have the Food and Drug Administration protect us from bad food and so forth. There was a women's movement that said women need to be paid more. They're not being paid equally to men. They're getting 41 cents for doing the same work that a man gets paid a dollar for. So we got to fix that. There was an environmental movement that said we got to do something about cleaning up the waterways. And then there was a labor movement that was strong and negotiated with steel companies, with auto companies, with oil companies, and provided a floor underneath the middle class standard of living. Powell was reacting to all that people power. He said, people power is being bad for the American free enterprise system. Business, you're losing out, and you're losing out not economically, you're losing out politically. You are getting taken to the cleaners, Mr. CEO. These guys woke up. He was like Paul Revere. It was amazing.
If I were to stereotype and say, well, this seismic shift from the middle class losing political clout to the businesses gaining the clout, one might say, oh, that probably happened during the Nixon years or another Republican administration. But you point out a lot of the changes happened during the Carter administration.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a fooler to me. I mean, most of us looking back tend to think of the Reagan presidency in the early 1980s as the really change point. It was the conservative Republicans coming to power. Republicans got control of the Senate. No, Powell's army went on the offensive. It was Powell's army that changed things, not Reagan. Powell's army got to work during the Carter years. They put in the 401k plan. That shifted enormous costs from corporate books to the pocketbooks and checkbooks of ordinary workers, hundreds of billions of dollars a year. They changed the interest rates. They blew the lid off the interest rates so that they could lend to subprime borrowers, which set the basis for the subprime crisis that came. They changed the corporate bankruptcy laws to the advantage of management, to the disadvantage of middle-class workers. They blocked labor from passing laws that would make it easier for trade unions to organize around the country. They blocked Ralph Nader in his effort to set up a Consumer Protection Bureau. Today, 50% of the capital gains in America from the stock market go to the top 1% of the people in the country. So the changes that occurred under Jimmy Carter, with the Democrats in control of both houses of Congress, began the whole trend that we see today. There was a sea shift in power.
This is Essential Pittsburgh. Our guest is Hedrick Smith, Pulitzer Prize winner, Emmy Award-winning reporter, producer for PBS's Frontline. His new book is Who Stole the American Dream? So middle-class wages have been stagnant for
essentially 30 years. And, you know, fallen minorities than even on the regular middle class of white people. It's fallen on everybody, but it's fallen particularly hard on blacks, on Latinos, and other minorities. They've taken it a harder hit with the middle class getting stuck. But it's across the board. It's everybody. I mean, there's nobody that's been excluded from this. What matters is where you stand. I call it wedge economics. Wedge economics in the sense there's a wedge driven into the American economy, if you can imagine it as a tree in a way, a wedge driven into it right in the middle. And if you're in the middle, you're stuck. You haven't moved. If you're below it, you've suffered. You've suffered worse. If you're above it, a little bit above it, you've done fairly well. If you're a lot above it, you've done really well. And if you're way above it, you've done tremendously. It's been a wonderful time the last three or four decades.
You use strong language. You don't just talk about gap or disparity. You talk about a wedge. You talk about a division. You talk about a chasm.
A gulf. It is.
You talk about two Americas.
Absolutely. That's what we are now. And I mentioned it before. Corporate profits are going through the roof and wages are constant. That's two Americas. We're living like two Americas. It's interesting. This is not just Hedrick Smith. This is not just liberal Keynesian economists. Citigroup, the biggest bank at that point in America in 2005, put out a glossy brochure for its premier clients, its wealthiest clients, and said, don't bother investing in companies that produce for the middle class or the upper middle class because there's so much purchasing power in the top 1% or 2%. That's where the purchasing power is. Invest in your Tiffany's. Invest in the people who make luxury yachts and make mink coats and things like that, because in these hugely expensive watches, because that's where the money is being spent and that's where the money is going to be made.
The voices, the thoughts of so many people are reflected in this book, corporate leaders, political leaders, average Americans. I'm going to point out two that you mentioned in your book. And these are people at the both ends of the spectrum, political spectrum, Rush Limbaugh, Rich Trumka. And they agree about the importance of the middle class.
That's absolutely right.
But is it the disagreement over how to strengthen, bolster the middle class?
Well, actually, what's interesting, you're making an interesting point here. They do agree. Rich Trumka being the head of the AFL-CIO and Rush Limbaugh, the head of the anti-AFL-CIO, if you will. Yeah, they both say the middle class is important to the future of America, and they both say the middle class has taken it in the neck. Rush Limbaugh tends to blame the government. You know, Rich Trumka will say, business leaders have not shared the wealth the way business leaders in America used to. By the way, it's very important. Very important here. We have lots of words being thrown around here, socialism, communism, so forth. We're talking about American capitalism when we remember that Charlie Wilson of General Motors or Reg Jones of General Electric or Frank Abrams of Standard Oil of New Jersey believed in sharing the wealth, that it was not only fair, but it was smart business, because if you paid your workers well, and they went out and they spent their earnings, which workers do because they can't afford to save much, they will then drive the economy. That big, robust consumer demand that you get from a large, prosperous middle class causes factories to expand their production, build new plants, buy new equipment, hire more workers. What's going on today? Look at it. Business is saying they're uncertain. They're uncertain because there's not the demand out there. You know, auto industry is slowly beginning to creep up. We're starting to get people. Housing industry, we're all waiting to find it. Is the housing industry going to recover? Those are big deals. Business has been sitting on $2 trillion worth of capital. So we're not short of capital. We don't need to lower the tax rates so that rich people can save more to provide us capital. Periodically, that does happen in American history. It's not going on right now. What's missing now is the engine of growth, which is consumer demand, and that depends on good jobs, good wages, economic certainty. People are worried. Even if they have money, they're going to be careful about spending it because they remember we just got clobbered 3 or 4 years ago. It's the consumer situation that is holding us back. That's what we need to fix.
What's happened to compromise? It used to be some of our greatest political leaders were great compromisers. Now compromise has become a dirty word?
Worse than a dirty word. Well, you're right. What's interesting, I lived through this as a reporter, and I was Washington bureau chief for the New York Times in the late 70s and chief correspondent all through the 80s and so forth. You know, people fought then. Parties fought. They had hard-fought elections. They disagreed on all kinds of issues, but they did settle things. They did pass budgets. They didn't have a fiscal cliff every 2 months. You did pass the civil rights legislation. You did pass Medicare. You did pass the poverty programs. You got aid to education. You got all kinds of programs passed. Part of what's happened is this huge economic divide. And this lopsided economic wealth at the top of our society has been used by billionaires and multi-multi-millionaires to try to cement their political strength. They've gone in and spent a lot of money on political campaigns, a lot of money on lobbying in order to get what they want, which adds to their economic privileges, which increases the inequality. So you have economic inequality feeding political inequality, feeding economic inequality, feeding political inequality. That's where we are.
This is Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Kevin Gavin. Our guest is Hedrick Smith, the Pulitzer Prize-winning former reporter with the New York Times. His new book is Who Stole the American Dream? I have to ask you about last November's election. During the campaign, both President Obama and Governor Mitt Romney were talking middle class, middle class, middle class. Was it just a bunch of talk? Is anything happening since the election to help the middle class?
So when did you say that election occurred? I think it occurred about a century ago. No. It's astonishing. Both candidates were talking about jobs and growth and the middle class. It is totally forgotten. And we're only, 4 months away from the election? 5 months away from the election? It's a joke. Talking about chasms, there is a massive disconnect between Washington and the country. And it's only going to be fixed if the people get involved. Getting off their duffs, getting out of their couches and saying what we did in the housing situation is unfair. We bailed out the banks. The banks were supposed to bail out the homeowners. They didn't do it. We have a stupid tax system. The corporations that move jobs overseas pay a lower tax rate than the corporations that keep the jobs in America. That doesn't make any sense. We have all kinds of problems.
Revive Citizen Action is part of your suggestion. In addition to changed policies, you mentioned a new type of civil rights movement, something right on the size of that. But do people care enough to get involved? Is there the enthusiasm, the energy to do something like that?
Well, you know, that's a jackpot question. Obviously, let's start in what you might not expect me to start with. Let's start with the Tea Party. Those people are energized. They're concerned. They're involved. They think big government, like Rush Limbaugh, they think big government is the problem. I don't agree with them. But they got energized. They got organized. They ran candidates. They raised money. And they made a hell of a lot of noise. In terms of public opinion polls, they represent about 9%, maybe 10% of the American public. If you listen to the media, it sounds like they represent 52%. They've made a hell of a lot of noise. Now, on the other side, Occupy went out and they got involved. But and they touched a nerve in America. Talk about America today. They put a whole idea into our political lexicon, the 1% and the 99%. You don't have to describe that to anybody today. They did that. But they, unlike the civil rights movement, they didn't have clear demands. What do you want to do? Do you want to break up the banks? Do you want to impose a financial tax? Do you want financial regulatory reform so consumers are protected? We got a consumer protection agency, which the Republicans in the Senate right now want to defund. Does the public actually want protection? Well, then people ought to let the Congress know. That's not what Occupy did. What isn't there is that notion that we can do it. It isn't whether or not they're upset enough. It's whether or not they believe in themselves enough. I think our problem today is not people not caring enough. I think it's not people not being outraged enough. A lot of people are outraged. They just don't believe they can do it. And I mean, just last night I was talking at the University of Missouri and somebody asked me a question like that. How can we do it? And I said, the only way you can beat organized money is with organized people. And they said, how can we organize? I said, if you don't believe you can organize, you won't. If you believe you can, you will. Just find the issues. There's housing, there's jobs, there's taxes, there's fairness, there's gerrymandering, there's campaign finance reform, and the issues are sitting there staring you in the face and they're driving you crazy. You have to believe you can do it. It isn't just a matter of protest. It's a matter of idealism. America can be better than it is today. So part of what we need is to get rid of some of our cynicism, which is, this is all rotten. It isn't going to change. They're more powerful than I am. We can't possibly do it. We got to change it to the positive attitude. The last six words of my book, I don't know if you've read them, but the last six words of my book are, we the people must take action.
Hedrick Smith, thank you so much.
Real pleasure to be with you, Kevin. Thanks for having me in.
Hedrick Smith is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, Emmy Award winner, best-selling author, his latest book, Who Stole the American Dream? I'm Kevin Gavin, and this is Essential Pittsburgh.
Could a bike-sharing program allow the Steel City to follow in the bike tracks of Washington, D.C. and London? We'll find out when Essential Pittsburgh returns on 90.5 WESA.